Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to In the Review Behind the Scenes. And this is The Writing Corner. And tonight, co-host Jamie White and myself are chatting with author C.P. Bialowis, who comes and gives us these awesome tips and techniques to make all of our writing better. But I will say to all those that are listening, I'm not sure I can focus because my co-host has posted some type of teaser, and she knows it's going to distress me. So for all of those that are following us on Facebook, you know exactly what I mean. You know the torture that I endure. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Someone's wanting trouble.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Now I'm all distressed for the next 30 minutes. So how are you guys?
Okay.
So our audience already knows we're a little bit crazy, so they're used to us. So,
yeah. Well, we have fun. It's not crazy.
Yes.
It's having fun.
We have fun, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that. So.
I'm just happy I'm not the one in trouble this time, so that's a change for me.
He's like, it's not me this time. Oh, my goodness.
I can't say that often, but when I do, I make sure people know it's not me.
Usually
I get someone to come up on my mouth with something, so I'm like, okay, you know what, this time I'm totally free and clear, I'm innocent.
Not me. It's not me this time. My
Maybe
name is
like
Bennett, I'm not in
time,
it.
Maybe one time, like, ever, you're innocent. Like, enjoy that now.
And it's like it's a little valley girl, you know, attitude over here now.
That's
yeah,
funny.
Well.
It's like the only time ever, so I just enjoy it. All right, very cool. Well, CP, what is it that you have for us this evening?
Well, I figured today, since I kind of got hammered on it last night, I've actually discussed period writing.
Okay.
Remember, anytime
cool.
we write something, like I said, we said in a different time period, whether it's the early 1900s, 1800s, whatnot, it's like we want to try to get our voice right. Now,
mm-hmm.
for myself, I mean, a lot of times, you know, a lot of authors, they just want to do the dialogue, and that's fine. You make sure the dialogue is consistent. That you can get just by reading some books like Mark Twain, you know, Mark Twain for the mid-1800s or so, late 1800s, and, you know, Dracula, Frankenstein, different ones offer different periods. You can kind of get a feel for how people spoke. But for me, I like to first take it a step further and actually write the narration almost like it would be that period.
Wow.
This is where you can actually, you know, call me insane or an idiot or whatever on this one, because I already write in a semi-formal style, like my epic fantasy, because each genre has its different style with it anyway. But if I do a period piece, like say early 20th century, like I just finished writing a thriller about, you know, a thriller taking place on the Titanic, and I wrote the narration pretty much like, you know, you would see in a book or here then. I mean, it's a lot of passive voice, but that was also the style at the time, so I kind of wanted to do something that kind of fit in that era.
Right.
And that's one
very
thing.
Cool.
It's like, I mean, it's like everyone has a different, you know, different ways of doing it. Like I said, it's like for myself, like I said, I like doing the dialogue and the narration. It kind of helps bring the feel out of the book for me. You know, brings alive more. Other people just want to do the dialogue. And like I said, whatever we decide to do, the best way to find out to do it is actually either just, you know, look up, like, say, the old speeches, like say George Washington or whatever, you know, during that time period, and you get a feel for how they were written there, or like the Declaration of Independence, just reading it, you can kind of get a feel. If you want something from England, I'm sure you can find old speeches or books written that time there, like say, like early 1900s, late 1800s, you can read Dracula. You know, among other different things like that, you can watch on like BBC America for different shows to get the vernacular, or if you know someone, you can just ask them.
Very cool. I have yet to read Dracula. I really need to read Dracula. I'm sorry. That's a side note. But, you know, we always hear about it. And how many people have actually read it? And I need to. But that is really cool. I'm also working on a night. See, it's always kismet. always, every time we do a writing corner, he always hits it right on what is happening, you know, in my life. So I am actually working on a 19th century, you know, early 1800s, a piece. How do you go about researching for that? I know you said that with the dialogue you can get the speeches, or you can read some of the books, or probably can find some of the shows, depending on what area. What about the other details? I mean, the world building, those little intricate, small, daily life things. How do you do it? Because that's what I'm coming up against right now as well.
Well, for me, it's kind of twofold, like, except for just like the dialogue, say 1860 or so, Mark Twain's a great example for that, because, you know, his narration, he wrote during that period, he lived during that period. So it's very authentic. So, I mean, for me, that's just the number one name that pops off the top of my head for, like, the 1800s, you know, would be him. You can, like, say, I think Daniel Boone's autobiography. I think Davy Crockett has an autobiography, like, early 1800s, 1870s, something like that. So it's, like, so it kind of gives you a feel just for how, like, they spoke and, you know, just the general words, because they're all smart, intelligent people.
Right.
You know, so it's, like, you can actually get a feel for, like, narration. I think Twain would probably be the best one, just from my frame of mind, because I don't know a lot of authors from that section. I mean, I do, but I'm not sure the exact years. Like, I love Robert Louis Stevenson, but he's in the 1700s. So, I mean, just like that, just like, you know, say, picking up, say, a Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, you know, Yankee, Sir Arthur's King Arthur's Court, you know, other things like that. It's like, you know, just a different story, just get a feel for how he tells them, and it can kind of give you a feel for it another way. I could get it up just to get the feel, but if I want, like, texture to it, like, let's say, like, for, say, Titanic, you want to try to understand the ship, well, then you have to look at it, okay, where can you find something like that? In a lot of ways, you can go to documentaries or even watch any movies they might have made. I said, for Titanic, we all know James Cameron. You're writing, a Western, I mean, John Wayne, you know, any movie by John Ford, you know, Wayne, Clint Eastwood, like, basically go in there and look at any of those and watch them, and it kind of gives you a feel and a texture for it. Even some of the dialogue might be right. But I can't trust enough. Do not always take Hollywood's word for it.
Right.
My dad loved Westerns, and he knew guns so much he could watch a movie and say, no, that's the wrong gun for this time period. That gun didn't come out until 10 years later. Well, that gun was out of circulation.
Wow.
I mean, he just knew he could pick it out, just show it as a revolver or a rifle, whatever. He could just pick it out. So don't just blindly trust Hollywood. Don't even blindly trust the books for the most part, because we do embellish. Stephen King in his book, Doom of Key, he actually added islands to the Florida Keys, and he changed the makeup a little bit to suit his book. He admits that. You know, it's author's prerogative, whatever he calls it. You know, so I mean, do your research, but you can get a feel for them from watching movies or television shows or the reenactments they have. Like, sometimes there's a, like I said, from the late 1800s in America West, there's a documentary of a Wild West tech with the host's name, but they talked to a lot of historians, and they basically, you know, they dress as cowboys, they live in the towns like that, and then they kind of live the lifestyle and they teach there. So some of those places are still kind of in the 1800s. So there are plenty of resources out there, but, like, documentaries, movies are great for the feel and the texture. If you look up that period and find out what authors were in there, if you want to do, well, just say in Great Britain, early 1900s, late 1800s, early 1900s, H.G. Wells, you know, around that time period, and a little bit earlier than that, because most of his are placed in there, and you can kind of get the feel for the narration and everything at that point. And also, you know, with the World Wide Web, we pretty much know someone that lives in almost every country around the world, too. So we can always ask if they know anything. You know, but if they don't know, maybe they can point us to the direction of, you know, of someone we can find, like some kind of a textbook or someone else that might be able to help us with it.
That is so true. Oh, my goodness. And when you just said that just really occurred to me that pretty much we all do at this point, and that's really incredible. a great resource for all of these, I mean, well, you can look at it, you know, like you can Google it, you know, and everything. But I think the New York Public Library online, they now have this incredibly free depository where they've uploaded all of these old documents. See, now I wish I had Googled this beforehand, but it has all of these speeches and everything from different times and all of these just you know, older papers and rare resources, and they're all free to the public. They had all of these books, and it was like, I think over the last couple of years, they did this big project where they were scanning everything in, and now it is on online. And I am sorry, guys, I will try before the end of the show to try to give you the direct link, but it has a lot of the things that you just named, you know, and I'm sure there would be a way to locate what you need for that. And, you know, I wanted to touch base on something you just said. You somewhat said it and went over it, and then we talked about something else. But you said that you wrote in the passive voice, because that's how they wrote back then. And my question is, they got away with a lot of things that we would get dinged for quickly now. I mean, you know, just info dump and just, you know, all of these descriptions and, you know, no plot. But I wonder, and maybe you guys would know, when did the pendulum swing that now just, you know, everything is just almost nitpicky down to the little, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that from where we came from? Is it because of where we came from? You know, was it because the writing was, you know, the way it was, or, you know, and these are classics, so I'm just curious, how did that pendulum swing? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, really, I think it's, the best example would be like, you know, sports. Like, as we watch something and evaluate something, we develop a science towards, like whether football, hockey, they examine how someone's hips turn, which way you turn your hips in this position, turn them this way, gives you an extra step or positions you here. You know, it's almost like broke down everything to an exact science. I think we do that with pretty much everything. The more we are exposed to it, the more we look at it, the more we tear it apart. I mean, I can't remember the author's name offhand, but he wrote a novel, basically a how-to book, you know, basically slamming passive voice. But he wrote the whole thing in every one of his other books in passive voice. So it's kind of like, I think we look at it, we just analyze everything, we break it down, almost like breaking down some of these molecular bonds, these molecular particles. And, okay, and then we try to reassemble and say, okay, well, this is how you write. You know, so I think that's just my kind of thought, that we just, you know, seeing things so often and so much, we just automatically start analyzing and breaking everything down, you know, to the point that sometimes it can be ridiculous. I mean, I think it was Ernest Hemingway, his one story about, with Mount Kilimanjaro. He was in an interview, and they're asking, well, is this your, you know, you railing against human nature and against death and this and that? Well, somebody's like, no, I just thought it was a great story.
Right.
Said to an English teacher, the head will explode. You know, because it's symbolism.
I know.
You got to have it, so.
You know, they would know really what to do with all of that. And I think we do maybe go a little bit too deep. And I agree that there should be tight writing, great writing, and all of that. But maybe because the writing is so well. But as a reader, I just know I'm usually in it for the story. But again, maybe that's the point. Maybe the writing is so seamless that I'm able to enjoy it, and I may not realize all the. I know I haven't realized all the work that goes into it, because until I started writing, everyone that's listening, I never realized how much work goes into a book. You know, really, with the writing the first draft, and then there's usually 3 and 4 or 5. 6 maybe, you know, reworks and beta reads, and good gosh, just did not know. I did find that, guys, that link is the online edition of the New York Public Library, now available. You can find free exhibits, classes, programs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you just go to Don't you just love it when you're on live radio and, you know, you're in there. It's taking a little bit longer than necessary. You go to nypl.org, and then you should be able to go in. And I'm not sure that's exactly what you need, but you can go in and you can find a lot of documents, the original documents from back in the 1800s, and just different things. I think it's a writer's research heaven. So I think that would be a great resource for anyone that may be looking for information for history, period writing. Do you enjoy writing period fiction?
Well, I do and I don't. I do like it because it's kind of like it gives you a chance to kind of, because I love history, I'm a huge history buff, it kind of gives me a chance to kind of touch base with it. And the same token, it can be a massive pain in the, you know, like a bedroom ass. For the Titanic one, I would sit there writing for 3 hours. I would spend 2.5 hours researching something.
Yes.
I mean, a friend of mine actually sent me, hooked me up a bunch of groups. I actually had to ask him one time, okay, well, this time they had pajamas, but were the first class mostly wearing pajamas, like silk pajamas, or were they still wearing the cap and the gowns, you know, from their previous age? You know, I was kind of curious.
Right.
Was it really just a crapshoot? Did they mostly have one or the other? And somebody said, yeah, no one's ever asked that before. I'm like, it's amazing what pops up. And a lot of times it's also amazing how Google doesn't help you. So
it doesn't,
so feel free to ask people. I mean, like that, what kind of locks they used, you know, like who was here, who was there. I mean, it's amazing the amount of research that goes into it. And I found I don't like doing research going in, but once I'm in it, that's when it really kind of sucks is when you have to do the research in mid-sentence.
Yes.
Or mid-paragraph or mid-page, because you sit there and you need this bit of information to keep going, and then you got to stop and look for it. I mean, it is fun seeing it all come together, but it is almost, I do look at it almost as doing a thesis in school, like doing a theme paper or doing a report, where you constantly have to keep looking up all this information, you know, working it in. So I do like it, but it is a lot like going back to school. So depending on your point of view on that one, you know, it could be a good or bad.
I agree with you because I'm in that situation, and, you know, I really want to become organized where, okay, I know I'm writing this book, so I'm going to get all of my research done, you know, and have my little note cards and, you know, all, you know, the dream, having it all together so that when I start writing, I can just go and pluck it out. But that never works for me. I usually start writing and as you were saying, just start researching as I go. But it is tougher when I'm writing these, you know, period fiction. It is. But as you said, you know, it's difficult just to get the character through. I'm having a hard time how to start the day because, you know, what do they do in 1811, you know, on a plantation, you know, just a normal day, you know, it would be different than what I know in my life. So it's difficult. Jamie, would you ever write, you think, in period fiction?
I don't know. I mean, I did a tiny bit, like a couple parts in the Staines books, but I don't know if I'd do that for a whole book or not.
It's fun.
Oh, come on, you know you want
it
to.
It is. Huh?
No.
What? I missed it.
I'm getting into trouble now.
Yeah, you are.
Oh my God!
Are
we time traveling now in the books? What are you saying? What?
He's getting in trouble because he's trying to like, oh, you know, you want to. I'm like, no,
okay.
I don't.
See, my mind is all on. All the books.
Yeah, one thing I can definitely say, writing that book has taught me. I'm much rather create my own worlds in epic fantasy. Then have to research everything because everyone will know something somewhere about whatever I'm writing about.
That is
in the real world.
True.
Yeah. I don't need someone, you know, it's like, you know, I don't want to be like that guy in a movie where in one scene he's a red tie, the next scene he has a blue tie, and you know, hey, moron, you did this, and then I'm like, yeah, I know.
Yes. All that is my biggest concern, you know, that they're going to like, no, that doesn't go here in 1811, blah, 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 blah. You know, so, you know, I make it part fantasy. I'm like, okay, no, I'm writing alternative history, so we change things. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, but I love reading them. I'm a huge history buff, and so I love it, and, you know, and I read some authors, and they have painstakingly, you know, researched. You know, I'll hear people say, well, I've worked on this book for 10 years. And I'm thinking, and it always makes me feel like such a slacker because I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know. But it's fun. I think it's one of my favorites to do. It's just, like you said, a lot of work. So what is the story that you're working on that's a period piece?
Oh, it's going to be a murder mystery, going to be more of a murder thriller on the Titanic. Yeah, and it's Maiden and Lonely Voyager. So, yeah.
It's the Titanic story. Okay.
Yeah, I had a Civil War one I wrote a few years back, but looking at it, I really had to figure out how to capture that voice again, because I was kind of writing it, you know, almost like a, like I said, the same vernacular as the era, you know, kind of a, you know, like, oh, shucks type of voice in it.
Right.
So I'll have to go back to Rich and figure that one out. But yeah, this one, is like I said, it's a Titanic story, you know, it's a turning more of a thriller on that, and I had to walk the line how much tech do I put in there. Yeah,
right.
I kind of wrote it more from a limited, third-person limited point of view, so he's not going to know everything, so putting things in about the ship he's not going to know. Like, yeah, how
right.
do I get the feel for it and not do that? So I kind of kept it so-and-so, and said I didn't go real in-depth mm-hmm. in tech, but I did a couple things just give people a flair for it, figure out the game. If it's a question they want to answer, if I don't figure out how to flesh that one, okay, they can always Google it or Wikipedia.
Right.
That's my little foreign. Like I said, those groups are in there. They know everything. I've seen people be able to pick up, you know, different lampshades, which one's the actual one side Titanic and which one's, you know, a recent copy. And they can just look at it and pick out which one. So there are people that know their stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little daunting because, like I said, mm-hmm. I don't want to be that, you know, that moron that gives a guy a blue tie after he had a red tie on like 2 seconds earlier. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it can happen. We all make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I try to keep a lot of the facts. I kind of keep, like, I try to keep them vague, just like I do in my fantasy stories. I find it works easier for me if I discover parts of the ship as a character discovers parts of the ship.
Oh, like that's
smart. As he moves around, he sees this and he
yeah.
sees that. That way I don't have to go in and go into depth and saying, oh, like the rose, you know, shaped lampshades, this or what, you know, different things like that. I can just kind of see what he sees, you see. So it kind of that
smart.
Made it a lot easier. But I'm also,
yeah.
I also kind of get yelled at because I'm not putting a description in there. Well, it's like, well, he doesn't see that, so how's he going to know that? And it's kind of get people looking at me. It's like, well, yeah, see?
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
It can be considered a cop out because if I wrote the omniscient like I usually do, I would have
brilliant.
A lot more in there. But yeah.
I'm about
yeah,
to try that.
I'll take it. It may be a cop out, but I'll happily take it. But I said, if I wrote an omniscient, I'd probably put a lot more in, and
right.
I might go overboard and actually bore the reader. I don't want to hand them a tech manual. You know, that would be like a Tom Clancy. Well, now you can build Titanic yourself. I'm so detailed. You know, so I was like. You know, just explore, you know, like, you know, explore the ship with them as you see it, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of like, okay, it's a marvel, but it's not a marvel. So it's like trying to walk a nice little line there, you know. It's character-based, so I can kind of get away from a lot more description that way. But
mm-hmm.
it's still a tightrope. I know I'm probably going to get people, it's just like everything else. People love it, and some other people hate it. Very
right.
few are, like, right in the middle with me, so. It's an interesting
yeah.
thing. Like I said, I got to appreciate my other genres a lot better where I don't have to, you know, follow strict historical rules. I can make up my own.
Right, but, you know, it stretches you. Are there a romance that you were trying your hand with? I thought that was a historical one as well. Was that
yeah,
the Civil
that
War?
That was a sweet romance. I thought I actually had the first one finished, but what I had done, I wanted to go, like, in a trilogy, and so I took the first book and tried to make all three books about the same size. I kind of cut a section up that's continuing book two.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of realized that when I went in there to look at it, I'm like, well, I don't know if I can capture this style right now. I got to be, like, in the right frame. I got to get really that historical mindset going. So I was hoping to get them out this year, but I kind of put it in the back burner. I was thinking maybe just doing one book and just leave
mm-hmm.
it with a, you know, ambiguous end and let people decide what they want to decide with it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do that, I have to delve into the other one and really pull it together and this and that. So it's like, it takes a little bit of rewriting, and I'm not, you know, I don't really have that voice in my head right now. So I kind of have
mm-hmm.
to kind of catch that back before I go back to that book. I did hope to have it out, but that's on the back burner for the time being.
Very good.
Yeah, all technical, you know, complications.
Mm.
Oh my goodness! So how do you get prepared? I mean, I know you only wrote a little bit, Jamie, when you were in the Stings.
Yeah.
You know, with the witches, and you went back a little bit, and then when you're doing your CP, the historicals, how do you guys get, like you said, catch that voice? How do you get in the? I don't want to say the mood, but how do you get into that frame of mind to write your historical? This is the same way you use music. If so, you can't use the modern music, I would think. So what do you do?
Well, for me, I actually, I kind of cheated. I didn't cheat. I have the soundtrack from the Titanic movie, so it's mostly instrumental.
Oh.
So, okay, I use that. One of my favorite video games was Titanic Adventure Out of Time, where a guy, Charlie, he's a British agent. He travels back in time during World War II during the Blitz of London. Back to Titanic, because if he succeeds his mission, World War One and Two don't happen. You know, so I used the soundtrack for that. I went on Amazon and I looked up Titanic historical books, and I got a couple that were free. You know, so,
wow.
You know, a couple that were free, like 1.99 cents. I bought one paperback of, you know, Titanic for Dummies, my first ending for Dummies book I ever bought. And I absolutely love that book. It's well written. It's awesome. There's plenty of little tidbits in there. He has listed the different the science shows about the Titanic in the book there. And I actually looked up a bunch of those on YouTube and the History Channel. I watched a bunch of those too, like just discovering it, like the, you know, the parts, like putting it together and the different myths about it and everything like that. So I just kind of, I just lived off of YouTube and, you know, soundtracks, reading those books. And I kind of, you know, it kind of, I almost want to say I was mostly just reading it. I kind of absorbed the facts. And when I wrote, I could kind of put them in there. I'm like, I like this thing. I like this part. I'm going to put this in here. I got to work this in. You know, like this part of the ship or whatever. So it's, so and that was my little cheat. Like I had like about five or six different things going on at the same time just to keep it flowing.
Wow. Wow. You do put in some time. That's very, very cool. Jamie, how about you? When you were writing the Staines books and you did have to go into history a little bit, what, you know, the mood and...
I mean, for most, I guess a little bit in some parts, I kind of got inspired with this documentary he was watching, about the old torture devices and stuff for a couple of the themes there.
You're so sweet.
I know, aren't I?
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, her reaction when she saw the pair, which is awesome. I just love her reaction on that one.
That's so crazy. But I've heard
many
of
say that.
But I've heard many of
you
talk about
a couple scenes.
And where...
Yeah.
Yeah, she's torturing characters. Oh,
it was a part of one of the scenes, though. It was, part of the story.
Hey, you do what you get. It works. The entire show, guys, what's in my head is, if anybody's ever seen Alvin and the Chipmunks, and when they say, Alvin, because Alvin is always doing something. And in my head, I have just been imagining saying, Jamie, because every time I see her on, she's posting on Facebook or whatever, she is doing something with these characters, and I love her series. And I just want to go, Jamie! But
you
anyway.
Oh, man.
I am. I just don't know what to do. I'm like... Ew.
You're so going to kill me when you read this one chapter. Oh, my God.
I don't know what to say, people. All right, we are down to time. CP, what would you everyone, just bring it all back together and tie it up, what would you like everyone to remember as we close this evening?
Look, don't be afraid of research. Ask people. Like my friend William Brower is a great source of Titanic knowledge. Ask people. Go for books, watch TV. Don't be afraid to look around and, be a dork and expand your knowledge. The information you need is everywhere. Don't be afraid to reach out and grab some.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool. Well, how can everyone touch base with you, grab copies of your books, connect with you, CP, starting with CP first?
Well, everything should be linked from my website, cpbialois.wordpress.com. If whatever reason you can't find somebody, just type in my name on Google. I'm the only one in existence. You'll find me.
All right. And, Jamie, how can everyone – thank you so much for hanging out. How can everyone touch base with you as well?
You're welcome. I have everything linked on my website, jamielwhite.com, JamieLwhite.
All right. Again, guys, there you go. You've received some awesome tips and techniques from CP, and I'm so grateful to you guys. I have been seeing you the post as far as, when we're posting, and so many people have visited our pages. We can always tell and see. So many people have visited the pages. We, also say hi. We would love to chat with you. And so thank you to all those that are trying to show out and are listening and, the different segments. And we just I hope, you're welcome to call in, chat with us on Facebook. And we just thank you again for sharing and liking and really supporting and showing the show love. All right, guys, that is it. We just hope that you have a wonderful evening. Why? Always said, because you deserve it. Have a good one, guys. Jamie! No, I'm just joking.
Bye.
It's in my head.
Bye.
I'm off the hat, guys. See ya.